Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 8th Canto, Chapter 9, Text 4. That's what's up there. Navayam tvamaraya daityai. Navayam tvamaraya daityai. Siddha Gandhava Charanai. Siddha Gandhava Charanai. Naspristha Purvam Jamino. Naspristha Purvam Janimo. Lokashais Chakuto Nibi. Lokashais Chakuto Nibi. Naswatna Navayam Tvamadaya Daichai. Siddha Gandhava Charanai. Naspista Purvam Janimo. Lokashais Chakuto Nibi.
It is not. Vayam, we. Tva, unto you. Amarai, by the demigods. Daicha, by the demons. Siddha, by the siddhas. Gandhava, by the gandharvas. Charanai, and by the charanas. Na, not. Asprista purvam. Never enjoyed a touch by anyone. Janima, no exactly. Loka ishai, by the various directors of the universe. cha, also. Kutaha, what to speak of. Nirbi, by human society. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. What to speak of human beings, even the demigods, demons, siddhas, gandharvas, charanas, and various directors of the universe, the Prajapatis, have never touched you before. It is not that we are unable to understand your identity. So this is the Asuras speaking to this Mohini Murti. Purport. Even the Asuras observe the etiquette that one should address no one should address a married woman with lust. The great analyst Chanaka Pandit says, Matrivat Paradareshu, one should consider another's wife to be one's mother. The Asuras, the demons, took it for granted that the beautiful young woman, Mohini Murti, who had arrived before them, was certainly not married. Therefore, they assumed that no one in the world, including the demigods, the Gandharvas, the Charanas, and the Siddhas, had ever touched her. The demons knew that the young girl was unmarried, and therefore they dared to address her. They supposed that the young girl, Mohini Murti, had come there to find a husband among all those present, the Daichas, the demigods, Gandharvas, and so on. Om Aginatam Anandasya Jananjana Shalakaracha So it's significant to note here that even the Asuras observe the etiquette that no one should address a married woman with lust. So they understood that. And as even in Asuric society or Asuric culture, they observe that. So that means that in cultures that don't observe that, you know, where they are not concerned, they'll approach married women, unmarried women. That means they're less than even Asuric societies. It means it's like a Rakshasa culture like that. Because even the Asuras, who are, you know, not particularly elevated, were observing that. And it's also pointed out here that when they were able to ascertain that Mohini Murti was unmarried, then they didn't feel any reluctance in approaching her. So that was okay in their culture, you know, okay to just approach an unmarried woman if she just happens to be, you know, by herself. But in more advanced cultures, even that's not okay. I remember this is years ago, but I was talking with Shastrakrit and his Dwarkesh. I don't know, maybe some of you remember Dwarkesh. And we were just talking, and they were describing to me life in India as, you know, growing up. And they were describing to me that, you know, that wasn't cool. You know, you couldn't, if you had a sister and some guys or some men were just walking up to your sister and started talking to her, you know, an unknown person, then immediately the brother would come over and say, hey, what's going on here? You know, what are you doing? Why are you talking to my sister? Like that. So, you know, as the more elevated the society, the more respect is shown, you know, in terms of dealing with women. And of course, there are different considerations why that's there. But as a general rule, that the more elevated, you know, the human society, the more respect and care is taken in how the men and women relate to each other. So I'm going to read on because, you know, I really couldn't think of a lot of things to say about that, this poor point. So I'm going to just read on a few more here. Text. What? I didn't hear. That was the next verse. So now I'm going to read on. Nunam tvam vidinas subru. Okay. Okay. Nunam tvam vidina subru prasitasi saririnam savendriyamana pritim vidatum sagulinena kem. Translation. O beautiful girl with beautiful eyebrows, certainly Providence, by His causeless mercy, has sent you to please the senses and minds of all of us. Is this not a fact? So tvam nas
sparhadamanam ekavastuni manini jatinam badavaranam samvidhatsva sumadyame.
We are all now engaged in enmity among ourselves because of this one subject matter, the container of nectar. Although we have been born in the same family, we are becoming increasingly inimical. O thin, wasted woman, who are so beautiful in your prestigious position, we therefore request you to favor us by settling our dispute.
Purport.
The demons understood that the beautiful woman had attracted the attention of them all. Therefore, they unanimously requested her to become the arbiter to settle their dispute. And a little more, and then I'm going to get to a kind of significant purport.
Vayam kasyapadayada bratara krita porusha vivajasva yata nyayam naiva bedo yata bhavet.
All of us, both demons and demigods, have been born of the same father, Kasyapa, and thus we're related as brothers. But now we are exhibiting our personal prowess in dissension. Therefore, we request you to settle our dispute and divide the nectar equally among us. Having thus been requested by the demons, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who had assumed the form of a beautiful woman, began to smile. Looking at them with attractive feminine gestures, she spoke as follows. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, Gatam Kasyapadayada, Pumschalyam Mahi Sangata. Vishvasam Pandito Jatu Kaminishu Nayatihi. Translation and purport by Shokapa. The Supreme Personality of Godhead in the form of Mohini told the demons, O sons of Kasyapa Muni, I am only a prostitute. How is it that you have so much faith in me? A learned person never puts his faith in a woman.
Purport.
Chanakya Pandit, the great politician and moral instructor, said, Vishvaso naiva kartavya striya stristu raja kaleshu cha. Never put your faith in a woman or a politician. Thus, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is pretending to be a woman, warned the demons against putting so much faith in her, for she had appeared as an attractive woman ultimately to cheat them. Indirectly disclosing the purpose for which she had appeared before them, she said to the sons of Kasyapa, How is this? You were all born, and this is, how is this? You were all born of a great rishi, yet you are putting your faith in a woman who is loitering here and there like a prostitute, unprotected by father or husband. Women in general should not be trusted, and what to speak of a woman loitering like a prostitute? So that's Mohini Murti speaking. Okay, now Prabhupada again. The word kamini is significant in this connection. Women, especially beautiful young women, invoke the dormant lusty desires of a man. Therefore, according to Manusamhita, every woman should be protected either by her husband, by her father, or by her grown sons. Without such protection, a woman will be exploited. Indeed, women like to be exploited by men. Oh, maybe I should have quit while I was ahead. I stayed on the last four. As soon as a woman is exploited by a man, she becomes a common prostitute. This is explained by Mohini Murti, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, Prabhupada quotes this statement of Chanaka Pandit elsewhere, actually in the Krishna book, this one, Visvaso naiva kartavya stisu raja kaleshu cha. And in the Krishna book, he quotes, he says, never put your trust in a diplomat or a woman. And then he goes on to say, those who are addicted to unrestricted sense gratification can never be truthful, nor can they be trusted with any faith. And in the sentence before that, he quotes it, he says, one who cannot control the senses cannot be steady in his determination. An atheistic person cannot be firm in his word of honor, and one who cannot control the senses cannot be steady in his determination. So, it's not painting a very positive picture here of women. And But just so the women don't get an inferiority complex, I'll read the beginning of that paragraph. It says, from the Krishna book, when Vasudeva was returning home with his firstborn child, although he was pleased by the behavior of Kamsa, he could not believe in him because he knew that Kamsa was uncontrolled. And then everything else I just read. So in other words, it's not just talking about women here. I mean, this applies to women. And as you noticed, you might have picked up on, it says, never put your faith in a woman or a politician. Okay? So it's not just, you know, women that are being singled out here. Not a women bashing comment. It's women, and it says politicians, because this is the point that's being made, that you know, they can't control their senses. So, practically speaking, Kali Yuga, this is everybody. You know, everybody. I actually looked up in the dictionary a definition for politician, because it says here, you know, you can't put your trust in a woman or a politician. So, I found this definition for politician. A person who acts in a manipulative and devious way, typically to gain advancement within an organization. So, once again, in Kali Yuga, everybody's a politician. I mean, everybody's acting in a manipulative way, a devious, manipulative way to get some material advantage in some situation. And that's inevitable, because if you're not a pure devotee, what else are you going to do, right? If you're not a pure devotee, if your motivation isn't to please the spiritual master, to please Krishna, to, you know, become happy like that, then by nature, you know, by the laws of nature, you're forced to try to be happy in a materialistic way. You know, the nature of the soul is anandamaya abhyasad. It's always seeking happiness. So if you don't know, if you don't have any information, if you're not fortunate enough to have, you know, contact with a pure devotee and a society of devotees and be engaged in devotional service and, you know, try to become happy like that, then inevitably you're going to try to become happy in a materialistic way, which means that you're going to try to wheel and deal to try to get a nice, you know, the best possible arrangement you can for your sense gratification. In other words, you're going to be manipulative and act in a manipulative and devious way to gain advancement in some situation. So, once again, it's this statement by Chanakya Pandit and the Kali Yuga. It really holds true for pretty much everybody, not just women. So it's not women that are, you know, once again, it's not women that are being singled out here as being particularly untrustworthy or like that. You know, it's they're just in the same boat with everybody else at this point in time, Kali Yuga. So the real, which brings me, these different comments are here, and that, you know, talking about the nature of women, but I just wanted to make that point. And in general, it's very difficult to correctly understand the nature of women. I think there's another place in the Bhagavatam where that's stated. Maybe it's in the pastime with Puru Rava and Urvasi speaking. She makes some statement like that. Does that sound familiar? Archie just kind of shaking his head, yes. And this reminds me of an interesting a joke I heard from my dog brother Vijay Prabhu. He said there's this man, he found this lamp, like an old lamp, and so he picked it up, and he's all, you know, dirty and dusty, so he took out a piece of cloth or something like that, and he was rubbing it to get it clean to see if there was some inscription on it or something like that, so he can get some better information. So he's rubbing it, and he's rubbing it, and rubbing it, and then all of a sudden, lo and behold, the genie pops out of the lamp. And, you know, if you remember from when you were a kid, you rubbed the lamp, and the genie popped out. And the genie said, oh, I am the genie of the lamp. Thank you for releasing me. And now I grant you one wish. You could have anything you want. So the man said, whoa. So he thought about it. He said, well, actually, he was working on the mainland, but he lived in Hawaii. So, and he hated flying. So he thought, okay, if you could you build a bridge from the Bay Area to Hawaii so I could drive my car back and forth when I go to visit my family? Because I just hate flying. I get nauseous and everything. So the genie thought about it for a second. He said, well, actually, that's pretty hard. That's pretty difficult. I mean, is there anything else you'd like? And he said, okay. He understood that's a lot to ask. I said, okay, well, I'd really like to understand women. And then the genie said, how many lanes did you want that bridge? Anyways, it says Vijay's joke, so. Did you get it? Okay. So anyway, so going on. So the real point is here is, so you can't trust a woman, you can't trust a politician, which is pretty much, in Kali Yuga, this is pretty much everybody. So who can you trust? You know, who can we trust? If you can't trust practically anybody, any materialistic person, who can you trust? Well, here's a description of who you can trust from the first canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 6. This is a paragraph from a particular purport. Prabhupada says, "The life of a sincere devotee of the Lord is thus explained in a nutshell by Narada Muni by his personal example. Such a devotee, sincere devotee, after his initiation by the Lord or his bona fide representative, takes very seriously the chanting of the glories of the Lord and traveling all over the world so that others may also hear the glories of the Lord. Such devotees have no desire for material gain. They are conducted by one single desire, to go back to Godhead." So we heard it just there. Such devotees have no desire for material gain, these sincere devotees. They are conducted by one single desire, to go back to Godhead. So when you meet people like fit this description, you can trust them. These are people you can trust. People who have no desire for material gain and who are conducted by one single desire to go back to Godhead. And it goes on to say, this awaits them in course of quitting the material body, because they have the highest aim of life, going back to Godhead. They are never envious of anyone, nor are they proud of being eligible to go back to Godhead. Their only business is to chant and remember the holy name, fame, pastimes of the Lord, and according to personal capacity, to distribute the message for others' welfare without motive of material gain. Once again, without motive of material gain. So that's who you can trust. You can trust people who are, fit this description, who are just trying to, engage very sincerely in devotional service and are trying to share that with other people. No motive for material gain. You can't trust the godasses, which is, people who aren't devotees of Krishna. Actually, there's a verse in the first verse, Upadeshamrita, goes, Vachavegam, Manasakrodavegam, Jivavegam, Udapashtavegam, Etandegam, Yobashahitadira, Saramapimam, Pativim Sasishat, that a person who can control the tongue, belly, genitals, words, minds, and anger, they're qualified to make disciples all over the world. So the point is, that's the description of a Goswami. So we should try to take shelter, seek out the association and take shelter of that kind of association, somebody who fits that description. And beyond that, we should try to become that kind of person too. We should try to get the shelter of those, somebody like in that category. And ultimately, we should try to become like that so that other people can take shelter of us. And that's an important point too, that that's actually part of the program of the Krishna conscious movement. That just the other day I heard it on a lecture. Prabhupada said, every one of you should become spiritual master. Now, whether he was talking about Diksha Guru, Shiksha Guru, Vatmana Padakshana Guru, I don't know. He didn't say. But, clearly it was Prabhupada's idea that he wanted his, disciples or followers, people who have come to his movement, to take shelter of pure devotee and also advance in devotional service themselves so they could offer shelters to others. And this is confirmed by this statement here. And this is, I know some of you who have been around for a while, remember this book, Preaching is the Essence? Nice little compilation book of very important statements Prabhupada made about preaching. And those of you who have written books like Judah Karma and some others maybe have written, Amala Bhakta's written books. So, on your cover there, you want to put something that's really important and really going to grab people, right? So there's two quotes. There's a whole book of quotes about preaching from Prabhupada, and there's two on the back of the book here, okay? And one of the two is this one. I'll read it to you on this point of how we should not only take shelter of advanced devotees, but try to become advanced devotees and give shelter to others. Prabhupada says, This is from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 6th Canto, Chapter 2, Texts 36 and 37. It says, a Krishna-conscious person should free himself from the clutches of Maya, and he should also be compassionate to all others suffering in those clutches. The activities of the Krishna-conscious movement are meant not only for oneself, but for others also. This is the perfection of Krishna-consciousness. One who is interested in his own salvation is not as advanced in Krishna-consciousness as one who feels compassion for others and who therefore propagates the Krishna consciousness movement. Such an advanced devotee will never fall down, for Krishna will give him special protection. That is the sum and substance of the Krishna consciousness movement. So, pretty nice quote. So that's exactly what we should try to do. Just, you know, remember that. Try to become Krishna conscious ourselves and then try to give it to other people. Have that conviction that if we're following sincerely, you know, if we're chanting our rounds, following the regulative principles, coming to the program, Krishna's going to protect us. You know, we should feel confident that we can go into any situation and, you know, if we're going in there with the right motivation, which is to share Krishna consciousness with other people, we're going to be protected. And beyond that, we're going to be empowered. You're going to be protected. You're not going to fall down. And above and beyond that, you're going to be empowered. And there's so many, there's a bunch of really good examples of that right here in this temple, you know, of devotees who are, you know, doing that. They're protected and they're empowered. What time is it? Okay, good. I'll go a little longer. So, for instance, I don't want to embarrass anybody, but Vijay Prabhu is very... good example of that. Vijay goes to places, that's spots, sankirtan spots, that strike fear in the heart of ordinary sankirtan devotees. You know, a couple of years ago he started going to Santa Monica Promenade. We would shudder in fear just at hearing the name Santa Monica Promenade, you know, because the people are just so arrogant and puffed up there. But you know, Vijay decided no. Got to go there. So he started going there, and you know, it took a bit. You know, just took him a week or so, but and then he just, as he uses the expression, he cracked it. And he started doing good there all the time. And, you know, so, and then more recently, Venice Beach. See? So really the thing is, if you surrender to Krishna, if you're, you know, a fair dinkum, it's an Australian expression, a fair dinkum devotee, you know, you're really. Like I remember Jai Dwaita Maharaj met some lady in the airport. He says, I like you, Hare Krishnas. You are what you pretend to be. You know, as if we are what we pretend to be, you know, trying to be real devotees, then Krishna will protect us and empower us. And the reason why, I don't want to embarrass Vijay, the reason why Vijay and a Sankirtan devotee in general is able to go practically any place and be protected and be successful is because the activity is not under the jurisdiction of the external energy. It's not. There's a verse in the Bhagavad Gita, Mahatmanas tumam parta daivim prakritim ashrita bhajanti ananyamanaso gyatva bhutadim aviyam, that the great souls, they're always chanting my glories, and daivi prakritim ashrita, they're under the protection of the internal energy. See? So when somebody surrenders to Krishna, to the degree, you know, yayatam ampapajante tamstatayva vajamyam, as they surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. So to the degree somebody surrenders to Krishna, to that degree their activity comes under the control of the internal energy of the Lord. And that's why, you know, devoted Prabhupada, the greatest example of this, you know, he came to a totally materialistic place, but because he was empowered by Krishna, it didn't make a difference. And you know, maybe we should, to make an experiment, we're going to send Vijay next to Skid Row down here in Los Angeles and see how he does there. Probably, I'm sure he'll do just as good. But the point is that when you surrender, you get protected, you get empowered, and, you know, wherever you go, you know, Krishna was in the heart. Actually, there's a nice purport in the fourth canto where Prabhupada says, the pure devotee is always thinking about how to spread the Krishna conscious movement. And being pleased with, you know, his attitude, Krishna inspires the general populace from within by his causeless mercy. See, so in other words, when the devotee is sincere, Krishna understands that. He's in the heart, and he makes it happen. You know, he inspires those people to be receptive. Ordinarily, they might not have. They didn't walk out of their house that morning thinking, you know, I really want spiritual life, or But it's Krishna reciprocating with the devotee, and that he gives them that's causeless mercy for them. Once again, he's reciprocating with the devotee. So that's kind of how it works, and so it's important to have that desire, you know, to try to preach Krishna consciousness, and Krishna will reciprocate. I'll give you another example of that. He's not here now, but Prema Sankirtan, he was. He's, you know, another example of that. He's on a regular daily basis, he's distributing books in a third language. You know, Croatian is his first language. English is more or less his second language. English is his second language. And Spanish is his third language. And I remember what was happening. We got kicked out of the airport and we were doing the schools. And he was finding it a little hard. So I said, Prema, come on, try these Spanish neighborhoods. You know, the people, he said, no, I don't speak any Spanish. I said, no, you could, you know, it's the people are nice. They're very, you know, soft and nice people. You know, you just have to say poquito de nación, you know. That's the only, and you'll get it. So he said, okay, give it a try. So, you know, we went out. And sure enough, you know, he started getting some results. And then, amazing thing happened. You know, like after about 3 weeks, maybe 2 or 3 weeks, because we would work close together, and I'm hearing him. He's stopping the people, and they're saying, he says something, and then, you know, they're saying something, and then he goes, Pedro Moreno, and then he rattles off some more Spanish, and every time he would do that, the people would just reach their, you know, and take out their money and give a donation. So after watching this for like, you know, a while, or maybe a week, I came over, one day I just said, I got to go over Prema. How did you learn this? You're talking to him about sports and Pedro Moreno. What is he, like a soccer player? And he goes, no. I just went into the back of the book, and that's when they say Guadalajara. That's the address of the temple in Guadalajara, Pedro Moreno, Sector Juarez, Jalisco. So he was just rattling that off, you know. And as soon as they said Guadalajara, he'd say Pedro Moreno, Sector Juarez, Jalisco, you know, with all this enthusiasm, and. I thought, you know, anyway, but the books went out. So, and then, of course, there's Sachit Anoy, and, you know, who's probably can distribute books into his 90s, like his mother. He's walking around, and, you know, a god brother of mine, Ganesh. I don't know, probably some of the Prabhupada disciples know him. He came over to the book booth at the Rath Yatra, and, you know, we were just talking, and at one point he mentioned, he says, did you see Mahaprabhu's mother? I said, no, what do you want? He says, she's dancing. She's, you know, dancing around in the Rath Yatra parade. And he says, I can't believe, you know, she's, how old is she? I said, well, she's at least 90 years old, you know. So, you know, amazing. So he's got the genetics. But he'll make it. He'll be distributing books for another 30 years. But if you ever distributed books with Sachin Anoy, you know, you'll have experienced something called the Sachi switch, which is like, you know, you'll be distributing. See, devotees compete. You know, it's not like competition is always there, but rather than competing for making more money or, you know, getting some material advantage, devotees are competing to, you know, distribute more books and, you know, please Krishna more. So the Sachi switch is that you distribute with Sachin Anoy, you're standing there, and when Sachi sees somebody he wants to distribute to, you know, he wants to make sure you don't see him. So what he does, he comes over to you, you know, he comes over and he starts talking about something to get your attention. And then all of a sudden, he just shoots. He just shoots off. We all experience this, right? Vijay's smiling and like, because, you know, yeah, you know, and it took me about 2 or 3 years to catch on what was going on, you know. But finally I did, and now I'm on to it. But anyway, so... We have, you know, this is for those of you who are newer devotees. There's so many devotees here, right here in this temple, who are really, treasure houses, storehouses of realization and, you know, valuable experience about particularly, specifically book distribution, spreading Krishna consciousness, temple president. I mean, if you think, just think about New Dwarka. It's no accident that New Dwarka is number one in book distribution for the last, 27 years? 27 years. Consecutive. 27 consecutive years, New Dwarka is number one in book distribution in North America. Because, you know, Savas, he sat down one day with his wife and they thought, okay, let's figure this out. How are we going to bring in enough income so that we could support this temple and support book distribution? And they did it, and they worked at it sincerely, and Krishna's reciprocated, and that's how we're able to do it here. Anyway, so once again, just for the newer devotees, please take advantage of, I apologize because there's so many more examples I could give of different other devotees, you know, who are, you know, fit this description, but time doesn't allow. So anyway, please take advantage and become, follow in the footsteps of Srila Prabhupada and, you know, his many sincere, committed followers, who, some of whom are right here, right in this very room as I speak. Okay, so I'll stop there. Does anybody have any question or comment? Mataji, yeah. Microphone over there.
Hare Krishna, thank you for a nice purport, for a somewhat controversial purport. I think that two other important things to consider in reading that is the context in which it was spoken and also the time period. The Srimad Bhagavatam was spoken to a group of Brahmins, a group of men, so obviously they would not be speaking of the opposite sex in that way, or if the group happened to be women, they would replace it with men. You know, don't trust men, don't trust politicians. But it happened to be spoken in front of men. And also that, you know, only in our lifetime women were given a right to vote. 100 years ago women couldn't vote, what to speak of thousands of years ago. So I think that those were just a couple other points that should be taken into consideration.
Yeah, thank you. Those are good points, actually. Balaram Prabhu.
Actually, also in favor of the women, I was with my guru, and the devotees' family, mm-hmm. the women and the children has no fault. The shoulder responsibility is on the father, the man. They will always get the fault. If there's any fault within the unit, family unit, the last point of responsibility is to the man. The woman and the child is faultless. That's according to our shastras.
Yeah. I mean, to put it bluntly, like here's this sentence. Women, especially beautiful young women, invoke dormant, lusty desires of a man. So, you know, it takes two to tango. It's not like women, I don't think women wake up in the morning and they're like, you know, little fiendish demons and they're thinking, okay, how am I going to seduce some men today? I don't think it's, you know, no. They're people, like every night, and they just wake up and they, you know, they can have their business. But just the nature of the thing, Krishna has designed things in such a way that women, especially beautiful young women, invoke dormant, lusty desires of a man. It's not like, you know, they're, you know, as I said, what's the word, calculating how to do that. And at the same time, you know, the men, they don't, it's not like the men don't have a choice. Men have a choice. You know, you don't have to become lusty. You can respond otherwise to that sense object, you know, to that particular thing. So, you know, it's yeah, just like following on from what you're both saying, it's not like you can't place all the blame on women. You know, women are the root of all evil. It's not like that. It's, you know, okay, we're all not pure devotees, and therefore we all have material desires. Women have material desires. Men have material desires. But once again, it takes two to tango. You can't just blame the women for any kind of, you know, sort of problem in spiritual life. It's not the way it is. Yeah, I'm Labhaktabhu. It'll help us here. clarify this delicate, sensitive point.
Thank you very much for your class and for some of the comments that I've heard. I'd just like to add a point that we keep talking in general about women, women, women. I mean, there's women who are in the mode of ignorance, and they act one way. There are women who are in the mode of passion, and they act another way. And there are women in the mode of goodness, such as Draupadi, the wife of the Pandavas, Queen Kunti, Gandhari. They act a completely different way. So, you know, when we make this broad, general, women this and women that, women who tend to be materialistic, who have no spiritual goal, who are basically in the mode of passion and ignorance, well, they fit to a T what Chanika Pandit was talking about. But Queen Draupadi, Queen Kunti, they don't fit at all. They don't fit into this category. And generally, from many of the purports that I've read in Srila Prabhupada, is that women who tend to be on the spiritual path and who are striving to become God-realized and trying to become more and more surrendered to the Supreme Lord and trying to develop their love for Krishna, they're very trustworthy. They have to be trustworthy if that's their goal. Trustworthy in the sense that if I'm untrustworthy, well, Krishna is definitely not going to like that. And if he doesn't like that, then I will not be achieving my goal, and I will be punished, and I will have to suffer as a result of being untrustworthy, which means lying, cheating, hoodwinking, manipulating. If I do that, I'll get the result. A woman who is in the mode of passion and ignorance, she may not think in those terms. Her terms is, how does she get her goal? It may be to get diamonds, it may be to get money, it may be to get position, maybe get a handsome, a wealthy man. So that will be, but it doesn't come out in such a blunt way. You see, I want this, it's more subtle. Well, he looks like a nice person to talk to, but there's another underlying subtext to it. So we have to think in terms of not just vague, general, women this, women that. We have to think in terms of different women under different modes of nature with different goals as a result of those modes of nature influencing them. And that's the only way we can think of that. But even a woman who may be under lower modes, like we have in the wonderful pastime of Haridas Thakur, who was a prostitute herself, and she came to Haridas Thakur, who was in his little hut, cause him to fall down, and the ultimate result is that she fell up. What happened is that because of his chanting, his purity, his love, even a person who is in mode of ignorance, who is untrustworthy, can be transformed and can be changed as she was transformed, and she became a great devotee, very famous in that area, and she was chanting 300 names of Krishna, and worshipped and glorified and honored by so many people. So we need to see things in terms of the individuality of the situation rather than just broad, sweeping strokes which group women onto one particular category of just untrustworthy. That's not fair. It's not right. It's not proper. We have to see things in their proper perspective.
Thank you. Archdeacon.
Hare Krishna. I think Goda Chandra is thanking you because he was going to do that verse tomorrow. Kumi had a point in that in former times, spiritual life, at least publicly, was undertaken by men. The women generally stayed home. So these statements are directed towards men who are supposed to be serious about spiritual life. And it's a fact. If you are serious about spiritual life, you have to follow these statements. Krishna is speaking here as Mohini Murti. He's warning, I'm going to cheat you. We see the context. And later on he shows also that by her attractiveness, he can cause even great sages like great personalities like Lord Shiva to act foolishly. So what to speak of those who are in lower positions? There's a very, very famous pastime from the Puranas where Vyasadeva was speaking on that verse, Mahatar Swacha Dahitrava Navatiksha Nilavet. Don't be in a solitary place, even with your mother, sister, or daughter. So one of his great followers, disciples, Sannyasi, was thinking, why is Guru Maharaj talking about something so basic? You know, why not something more elevated? So he goes back to his ashram that night, and it's big thunderstorm, knock on the door, and a beautiful woman is there. Can I stay in your ashram? I can't travel anymore in this weather. He said, no, you can't sit. But I don't have a room down there. You can stay there. And then the rest of the night, he's simply thinking of that woman. And he went and knocked on the door and said, please, you have to be mine. I said, well, I can't just be yours. You have to marry me. Okay, I'll marry you. But you have to come now. I can't wait till tomorrow. So in the rain, he's taking her along. And then she said, I can't travel anymore, but you have to carry me. So he carries her on her back. And when he reaches to this Brahmin who was going to marry them, he turns around and says, Vyasadev. And he says, see, you rascal. So the point is that these statements are directed towards men who are supposed to be serious about spiritual life. That's why they're made so strongly.
Mm-hmm.
It's not to put women down. It's to warn men that if you want to be serious about spiritual life, you have to take respect and how you deal with the opposite sex seriously. That's what the statement is meant for. It's not about putting women down.
I think, should we stop there? Because it's already... So stop there. Thank you very much. Grantho Jumad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
Yeah, one for 15 months.